This is Conducting Business, a podcast about the music industry from WQXR.org. I'm Naomi Lewin. Bela Bartok once said, "Competitions are for horses, not artists." With the Kentucky Derby only days away, nobody is going to argue with the first half of that. But what about the second part? In a crowded classical music world, can competitions help audiences discover new talent? Or, as their critics argue, are they bad barometers of artistry and career potential? In a moment, we will get three views on that. But first, joining us on the line is the pianist you're hearing in the background, John Nakamatsu. He won the gold medal at the 1997 Van Cliburn competition. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
At the time you won the Van Cliburn, you had a day job, in quotation marks,
right,
teaching high school German. What did winning the Van Cliburn do for your career as a teacher and as a pianist?
Well, I never went back to the classroom, that's for sure. I was touring 3 days after the announcement and never really stopped. So in a sense, the Cliburn changed my life overnight. And I think that competitions have the potential to do that.
After the immediate boost from that competition win, did the Van Cliburn gold medal continue to help your career in the long term?
I think so. I mean, all a competition is for music is the opening of the door. You know, it's very much unlike an Olympic gold medal, where that may be the pinnacle of an athlete's competitive career. But for us, it basically gives us a reason to be marketed and to be looked at by presenters or organizations that now have a reason to sell us. And it doesn't necessarily mean, and one would hope it doesn't mean, the end of your artistic development. And in fact, it occurs at the beginning of our career, so we hope that it's really the beginning of a long process of development.
Have you wound up performing with as many major orchestras and having as many major gigs as you have wanted to over the years?
Well, never thinking that I was actually going to be able to do this, and now touring 80% of the year, playing basically all over, I can't complain about anything. And I think that, if you believe that all you're going to do is play with the greatest orchestras and the greatest halls on the planet as soon as you win a gold medal, then I think you're really, really misguided. I think you as a person and you as an artist have to develop your career as it unfolds. No one just hands you anything. And I think a lot of young people have unrealistic opinions as to how these things unfold. For me, the opportunities that came after the Cliburn were amazing. And what has really pushed me into where I am now, I feel very, very grateful for that.
Did you feel that the judging process at your round of the Van Cliburn competition was fair and transparent?
Well, I would have to say yes, because I won, but if it could have been anything. I entered a lot of competitions, and I lost a lot of competitions. And when I won the Cliburn, I was 28 years old, so I had a very sober view of what these events were. I mean, I was no kid out of high school, so I knew what the potential was when you went to these events. I knew that you could play your best and be completely eliminated before it even starts, basically. And I also knew that I could not play my best and somehow get pushed on. In fact, when I played my first round at the Cliburn, I was ready to leave. I wanted to go home. I thought, there's no way that they're going to pass me into the next round. It just, was not what I had hoped to do. And it was my teacher who convinced me, you just have to stay. You never know what they're looking for. You never know how how a particular jury works and how they will vote.
So what do you make of the Bartok quote? Are they a reward for artistry competitions, or are they a horse race? And would you recommend to a young pianist today to enter a competition?
I think they're both. I don't really like competitions. I mean, the idea of a subjective art being subjected to this type of 3 points for him, 2 points for her, is really kind of ridiculous. I think it, in fact, in some ways, negates all of what creative art is. However, in a world where so much of what gets played in public depends on a very strong business aspect, I think a competition can be a quick way that a young person can gain some renown. And again, it gives that person a reason to be sold. It gives a presenter a reason to hire that person who played the same way he did the day before the prize as he did the day after the prize. So I really think we just have to take them for what they are. And if you are going to enter them as a young person, you understand that what happens there is of the moment, and there is no guarantee.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
That was the concert pianist John Nakamatsu, who won the gold medal at the 1997 Van Cliburn competition. Here now to give their views on competitions are three guests. On the line from England is Norman Lebrecht, a cultural commentator and author of several books, including The Life and Death of Classical Music and Why Mahler. And with me in the studio, I have Yocheved Kaplinsky, known as Veda. She is chair of the piano department at the Juilliard School. She sat on numerous competition juries, including the Cliburn competition.
Hello.
And also here with me is Susan Elliott, the editor of MusicalAmerica.com, which has a new report out on competitions. All right, Norman, I will start with you. We just heard what John Nakamatsu had to say about competitions. What is your response to that?
I found it fundamentally true and profoundly depressing. Everything that John Nakamatsu describes is a function of the classical music world that has reduced art to a cattle market. And he basically describes himself as one of the cattle that is bought for trade. Let's look at it, first of all, in a historic perspective. Competitions are a fairly recent invention. Fritz Kreisler, Yehud Menuhin, and Isaac Stern never entered a competition. There was never any need for competitions. They didn't really begin until the 1930s, and they reached their heyday during the Soviet era, when there was tremendous pressure in the Soviet Union to produce local winners who would, as it were, advertise the system. And this has generally spread across the classical music world, and it has bred a different kind of artist. It's bred an artist who is very often educated and reared to compete rather than to perform. It has created a kind of fast-track way to impress an educated audience. And this may have helped, it may have contributed to a degree, to some of the distance that audiences feel from classical artists.
And if I can jump in here, just...
Oh,
okay. Well, I was just going to ask Veda, since you've compared all these pianists to cattle, Veda is currently training some of those cattle, and I was going to ask her for her contribution to how she feels.
Well, we actually spend a lot of time trying to make them feel that they're not cattle, that they are individuals. And even if they enter the competitions, they still should feel and be treated as individuals. And, you know, I can't disagree with what's been said, but there is another side to it as well. And I think that the reason that competitions are getting such a bum rap is because the expectations are unreal. The expectations that we have of competitions are not what they're really about. If a winner of a competition is not of the stature of a Rubinstein, then the competition is no good. But the competition really never set out to discover Rubinstein. We now have, as Mr. Lebrecht said, we now have over 200 competitions, international competitions, not including local ones. I don't know what the exact number is, but I think it's growing. It's about 700. Yeah, but I think the ones that are registered in the Federation, the number is a little bit less.
Now, this is for all instruments, not just for piano.
Yeah, well, I'm...
700, you said, yeah. Susan.
I'd say 700, 750. We've got about 550 listings.
But that's in all categories. Not,
yes,
we're not talking just about pianists.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, of course, there's no way of discovering a Rubinstein in every one of those competitions. And that's not what they're about. They're simply about a way of allowing managers, presenters, conductors, audiences to figure out who is most ready of a crop of pianists to receive the benefits that the competition can give. It maybe is accentuating the wrong side of classical music, but it does create interest in the wide public in classical music. Practically, they do serve a purpose.
Well, that brings me to Susan, your new study that is out. Does the classical music business look to competitions as a way to identify new talent?
Yes, it does. The interesting thing in this study, we interviewed presenters, managers, people who have won competitions, a whole range of different folks who are involved in the process. And what we found is that, by and large, everyone said they were a good idea because they were a way of exposing new talent. But when you speak to managers, they say, yes, it's a good idea, but it's only one piece of the picture. And if we hear that a conductor has won a competition, we're not just going to say, oh, let's sign him up. We're going to say, let's keep an eye on him. Let's watch him in rehearsal. Let's see how he is with the orchestra. They're looking at the whole picture. And I think that's true, by and large, across the range.
Norman, I think I cut you off. You had a second point you were about to make when we veered into...
Indeed, yes. I think we should look at competitions as a transient phenomenon and one that is actually coming to an end. I think they're becoming less and less relevant. As both Zeta and Susan said, managers and bookers don't actually follow competition results today as closely as perhaps they might have done 20 or 30 years ago. And that's for a number of reasons. Firstly, there is the issue of corruption, which exists at a number of levels and which is embedded at a number of levels. At the very, very most common level, it's the corruption of one judge saying to another, I'll vote for your pupil here if you vote for my pupil there, which is...
Norman, do you have absolute proof of that?
Yes. Multiple anecdotal proof of it, yes.
Well, you know,
yes.
when you have 700 competitions, it's bound to happen. But I have served on the juries of some of the most prestigious competitions in the world, and I beg to differ with you.
Because you've served on the juries of some of the most prestigious competitions of the world. But below that level, it's rife.
And even among
the most prestigious competitions of the world, the Tchaikovsky competition has been rigged over and over and over again until this year when it was for the first time transparent.
I know you've written extensively about this, so yep. Talk about in what way.
Well, I mean, speak to any of the artists who were there. I mean, go back as far as 1960, talk to Vladimir Ashkenazy and ask him about the experiences that he endured, the way that he was pressured to go in and pressured to play certain pieces, the way in which jury members were approached and threatened and expected to vote in one way or another, and it's gone on that way throughout. Occasionally, audience pressure could, as it were, overturn a prefixed result, but very often it was rigged.
Yeah, but I don't think we can model our opinion of competitions based on the Soviet Union.
No.
And the proof is that at the last competitions, they finally cleaned up their act and decided to do things the right way. And
finally, in 2011.
Okay, but that's
20 years after communism.
That's right, but that's communist Russia, and that's Russia. But if we talk about the Western world, you talk about competitions like the Clyburn, like the Rubinstein, like Cleveland, like Leeds, Queen Elizabeth, there's a number of them that conducts themselves in a very transparent way and actually picks their jury based on their knowledge of how honest and how clear their opinion is. And most competitions that I know try to create a very diverse audience. Some of them have to because of the rules of the Federation of International Competitions.
Yeah.
But they also would like a variety of opinions and a variety of views. And the jury conducts itself with the greatest amount of respectability and integrity, to my experience.
I'd like to ask Susan, who has just sort of done an impartial, as it were, study of this, what do you have to say about corruption in competitions?
Well, it's interesting. We have one presenter that we talked to was very realistic about this. He said that, yes, there may be biases built into the judging situation, but there are biases in life. So if you know someone better than another pianist knows someone, the chances of you being hired might be slightly greater. You don't know. But the bias is very different from corruption. And the other thing I wanted to say to Norman, especially,
that's
was...
That's a very subtle distinction.
Excuse me?
Well, not really. I mean, that's a distinction that you make when you review concerts. I mean, you can read two reviews of concerts, and you wonder if they were reviews of the same concert.
Sure.
And yet each one of them is honest, because this is the way the reviewer actually felt. And that happens in competitions as well. You know, I was on a panel once that had a competitor similar to John, who was incredibly eloquent and funny and witty. And this person was asked, to your experience, are competitions ever fair? And she answered, only if you win. and that's the truth. If a competitor does not win and happens to have had unrealistic expectations, they're going to go home and figure out what is wrong with this competition, and they will latch on to anything except their playing. They will accuse the jury, they will accuse the administration, they'll accuse the piano, they'll accuse their teachers, they'll accuse anybody. And that becomes common practice, and now it's even spread much wider through the internet and the media, the social media. So basically every competition has about 10,000 judges, and they all have equal opinions, and they all have the honest opinions except for the jury.
I want to come back to the whole issue of how the judging goes. But, Susan, you had one other point you were trying to make with Norman.
Yes, Norman, you said that they were soon to be a thing of the past, coming to an end, irrelevant, et cetera. And I would strongly disagree with that, especially with the popularity of shows like American Idol, that sort of thing. I mean, they have this sort of built-in theatrical arc, you know, the winning and the losing and all that sort of thing. And
And those are certainly creating stars in the pop world. Can they create the same kind of stars in the classical world, competitions like that? Do you see something
that,
like
I mean, that?
Oh, I don't mean being on American Idol. I mean just the idea of the competition is become much more popular with our society.
I mean, Susan, that is exactly why I think the classical form competitions are coming to an end, because they are competing with something with which they cannot compete. We are seeing now a number of quasi-classical performers appearing in American Idol and America's Got Talent, little Jackie Evancho and various others, who are being put up as supposedly classical artists before a mass audience. They attract a huge fan base. Those of us in the classical world know quite clearly what their strengths and what their deficiencies are, but they will have a much bigger career than anybody we produce from any of the classical
competitions. Norman, you've taken what I said and completely turned it around. I did not mean that we're putting classical people on television and competing on American Idol. I'm saying the sensibility of the interest in the competitions on television has become more widespread across our whole society. Therefore,
yes,
if I may finish.
I don't think I've turned around. Wait
a minute.
What you said.
I think
just presenting the other side of the coin.
Right. Let Susan finish what her point is,
And the other side of the coin is that there is now a public expectation for a public vote. And that, in effect, reduces the popularity, albeit limited, of the classical art form competitions.
Totally disagree with you on that one.
Okay.
More and more competitions have a popular vote. There is a judge's vote, and then there's an audience vote. A lot of them are going online with videos of the performance, so you can actually see the live feed of what was going on at the competition. And they invite people to participate and to vote. The judges have nothing to do with what the popular vote is. You'll find that is the case. If you look at some of the recent winnings, you'll see that that is, in fact, true.
Okay. I mean, I will agree with you to the extent that I think last year's Tchaikovsky competition was a mold breaker. In the sense that every session was live online. You could access it on the internet from every country in the world. You could make your own decisions. You couldn't actually vote, but you could see that the voting process was something which accorded with some kind of objective reality.
Well, this is what happens now in every competition. Every competition goes online now. Every competition is streamed all over the world. And that creates a problem for the jury, because the jury sits there all day very intensely listening to every note. People at home are listening sporadically while munching on some food or going to the bathroom, and they profess to have an equal opinion to the judges, and they really don't. They don't have the entire picture.
Veda, I would like to ask you, since you have sat on numerous juries, how does it work if you're judging something like the Clyburn and one of your students is competing? Do you vote on that student?
No, I do not. There is no self-respecting competition that will allow you to vote for your own student. And those of us who feel that the sense of integrity really surpasses everything, not only do not vote for our students, but we do not discuss our students, and we do not say anything to anybody else about our students. And usually people who do that, you know, who coerce other judges or make deals with other judges, do not get invited to consequent competitions if the competitions are reputable. And I can't vouch that all of them are reputable, but the main ones, the ones that really help.
So I can give you an instance of the exact opposite that was brought to my attention a few weeks ago, a reputable competition where a judge was told that if he didn't vote in a certain way, he wouldn't be invited to judge the next competition.
Well, I have never experienced that, and that's very unfortunate, and I would love to know which competition that is so that I would never serve on the jury there, but I have never experienced that, and I've been to many, many competitions.
If I may just ask you, Veda, how, when you get at loggerheads about particular contestants, I'm remembering the very famous example of Martha Argerich, who walked out of a competition judging because she didn't like that they were going to throw Ivo Pogorelich out. How do you resolve when you have judges with completely different opinions? How does that get resolved?
See, my feeling is that when you accept the opportunity to judge a competition, you're basically relinquishing your right to decide who should win. You have a 1/11th or 1/13th element of the vote, and you can express yourself and the voting system within the voting system. But beyond that, you have to accept the fact that there will be 11 or 12 other jurors who are going to have their own opinion and may not go your way. And in fact, it very often does not go your way. So unless somebody comes up with a better system, which nobody has been able to come up with, how to basically single out individuals that are ready for more opportunities, then I don't know how we can eliminate competitions, because they are a useful tool. And I should also say, from the students' point of view, that they're a very useful tool for them to organize themselves, to test out their own ability to withstand pressure, because there's nothing more pressurized than having to go through three or four rounds of competitions and to have that much repertoire under your belt at the same time. And many of them use that as a tool to get better, because they gather information from the particular competition of what worked, what they did well, what they don't do well, so that the next time they try, they're better equipped to deal with it.
May I butt in and disagree there? I know artists in the middle of their careers who look back in fear and loathing at the years in which they had to go through competitions. And what they do now on the concert hall, on the concert platform, is completely different from what they had to do in their 20s, from the hoops they had to jump through in their 20s in order to impress judges. And they feel that this whole process was irrelevant to their development as an artist. It was a piece of marketing. It was a way of trying to get them in the shop window for a moment so that they could get a bit of a launch.
What's wrong with that?
Their 20s could have been better spent. They could have found a different way of communicating with an audience rather than having to go through the process of communicating with the
judges. But they have to first have the opportunity to be exposed to that audience, which is what we keep coming back to. This is what competitions are important for.
There are an awful lot of artists who do make careers without going through
competitions. Absolutely, there are.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you, but basically there are three ways of making a career today. One is to be a wunderkind and be on the stage at the age of 10 or 12 or 13, and then develop from there, establish all the contacts that you need to make a career. The other is to find a conductor who will champion you and take you everywhere they go. And other than those two ways, the only other way to make yourself known is through a competition.
Can I just ask, though, there's a classic complaint about competitions is that they favor the kind of clinical precise virtuosity that somebody can churn out under that pressure at the expense of maybe a more interesting artistic personality. Do competitions reward good competitors rather than great artists?
That would be my argument.
I think it also depends on the competition. Some of the people that we spoke to in the business said that it's interesting to notice how many people who did not win, who may have been third or fourth place winners or may have won for best performance of the original composition, the one that was commissioned just for the competition, but may not have even placed as one of the big winners. And I think that's interesting to note as well. I mean, I think there are more opportunities within a competition for exposure for the artists who enter than there have been in the past.
Yeah, and I also have to say that now we don't send students to competitions in order to become artists. That's not their function. We send them to schools. We send them to concerts. We send them to the library in order to become artists. The competition is a way of testing out the grounds, and it's not a perfect way by any means, but there is no perfect way, and this is just a way that happens to catch the fancy of the public. It happens to catch the fancy of many managers and presenters, and I'm afraid that it is here to stay. It's only growing so far.
Well, yes, and we were talking earlier about the number of competitions. Norman, you just wrote very recently about a new or newly upgraded violin competition in Germany that is now offering the biggest prize pot of all, is how you put it.
Yep.
Why add yet another big competition? Or
well, it becomes a question of local vanity, of mine is bigger than yours. You know, there are people who still believe in the competitive ethos and who still think that this should be part of it. My gut instinct is that it is, despite such things, in decline. I think the top end will always be there. There will always be a Tchaikovsky competition. There will always be a Chopin competition. There'll be a Reine Elizabeth, and now there will be this new Joachim competition. I think there will be pressure on some of the others, and I think there is also now a higher bar to be involved in competition. Now, as Zeta was saying, there is pressure to be online. There is pressure to compete for the time of time-busy people in many parts of the world, and not everybody's going to be doing that.
Now, the Van Cliburn competition is making an effort to give its winners more support with management. Susan, do you think that's really going to pay off?
Yes. The IMG Artists and the Cliburn have just signed an agreement where they will have the option, the management will have the option of taking on the winner as one of their clients. And there are also other competitions where part of the winning is the ability to, our engagements, booking engagements for the artists.
Well, as we are taping this, 88 violinists are set to arrive in Brussels for the Queen Elizabeth competition. Does a gold medal there or anywhere mean what it once did?
No, definitely not. It can't, because there are too many competitions, and there's no way that one competition alone can produce, unless it's somebody really, really exceptional, you know, that you have once in a generation. What it means is, as John was saying at the beginning of the program, it's an opportunity, it opens some doors, and then it's up to the winner or competitor to really make sure that those doors will stay open. Some people know how to take advantage of it, like John, who made the best of it. Some people do not. And that's not necessarily because they're not good enough pianists. It's just that in order to make it in today's world, as a musician who has a career, you have to have a package. It's no longer enough to just play the piano well. You have to have stage charisma. You have to have the ability to communicate with presenters, to communicate with conductors. You have to have a package that includes a tremendous number of different elements that not everybody has.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us today on Conducting Business.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been speaking with author and cultural commentator Norman Lebrecht, Juilliard piano chair Yocheved Kaplinsky, and Susan Elliott from MusicalAmerica.com. Brian Wise is our producer, and Bill O'Neill was the engineer. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thank you for listening.